Don't let your legacy IT systems cost you money, innovation, and a place at the digital table of the future. You can change your systems and the economics of IT with software from Red Hat. See how at redhat.com.
More than 1.5 million people drive for the global ride-sharing juggernaut Uber. They're always available day and night, taking us where we want to go.
But is driving for Uber a productive, profitable way to make a living? Does Uber come through on its promises to drivers?
It provides much-needed income for college students, the recently retired, and the unemployed. But half the driving gets done by people working more than 35 hours a week.
These people often fight to make ends meet. The hours are long and the returns can be meager.
Today we're exploring the sensitive relationship between Uber and its drivers. Our story starts back in the fall of 2010 when Uber was just starting out in the Golden City by the Bay, San Francisco.
One of the first Uber drivers was a soft-spoken immigrant in his mid-30s named Sofiane Ouali, an Algerian former safety specialist in the oil industry.
Like many immigrants to the U.S., Sofiane found work in the taxi and limousine industry. A fleet owner gave him a smartphone with the Uber app and a pearl-white 2003 Lincoln Town Car.
To get people to like the car, because it's white, and the whole system was black, so it's called...
At that time, all Uber's cars were black. This car stood out. In fact, as Sofiane tells us, Uber initially wanted him to change the car.
Even Uber got in touch with me to try to convince me to change the car, and I was like, if the car changes, I am not here too.
Because you had no other option.
Exactly, I had no other option, and I started to build some riders' esteem to that car. And how I did that, it was like telling my riders that this is the only single white car in the whole fleet.
You branded the car.
Exactly, I branded the car, exactly.
Pretty soon, Uber's customers were tweeting about the car and reviewing it on Yelp, hoping that they would call an Uber and get Sofiane's majestic white ride.
There was something magical about Sofiane's car, and someone, who it was exactly is lost to history, decided to call it the Unicorn. Hi, I'm Brad Stone.
And I'm Eric Newcomer. Welcome to this week's episode of Decrypted. Now, Brad, come clean. The timing of this podcast isn't totally coincidental.
Okay, right. My new book, The Upstarts, comes out this week on January 31st. It's about the rise and rapid expansion of the global sharing economy juggernauts Uber and Airbnb, and the nearly nonstop controversy and turmoil that they have left in their wake.
Today's story of Sofiane and the Unicorn is drawn from Brad's book.
And through Sofiane's experience, we'll dig into the skills that all entrepreneurs, including Uber drivers, need to make it in a rapidly changing business world.
We'll also look specifically at what Uber offers its drivers and ask whether one of Silicon Valley's most celebrated successes is living up to its mission of helping drivers generate self-sustaining income.
Sofiane is one of the world's most prolific Uber drivers. He's been there since the beginning and says he's driven around 30,000 rides. Now, that's 5,000 rides a year, more than 415 rides a month, more than 83 rides a week, working 6 days a week.
Not to be glib, but that's a lot of sitting down.
It is. So, it's San Francisco in the fall of 2010. Even in Uber's early months, Sofiane implicitly understood its potential.
Customers loved it. Drivers didn't waste as much time sitting around, waiting for fares. And the app was easy to use, so newcomers to the city could seamlessly find their way around.
In the beginning, Sofiane says it just paid the bills, but after a while, the money started pouring in.
Sofiane was like a lot of early Uber drivers. He saw the company as a platform on which he could build a business. Uber encouraged this. Travis Kalanick, Uber's CEO, boasted about drivers who were building fleets of cars on the Uber system.
After 7 months, Sofiane left the fleet and took over the Unicorn's lease from the owner. Then he started taking loans out, leasing new town cars and hiring new drivers.
His company was called Global Way Limousine. because he had aspirations to expand around the world, and business was good. He told you he was making $700 or $800 a day?
Right. He was doing that by taking commissions from his drivers who were driving his cars for Uber. Meanwhile, Sofyan kept driving the Unicorn, which was getting famous in the city.
And at the same time, you've got this car that's kind of a local celebrity, right?
Exactly.
The Unicorn.
Exactly.
Did you find that people wanted the Unicorn, that they were trying to hail it?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, a lot of people who I get every day, they all... The ones who love it, they all say, how can we get you every day as our driver? But unfortunately, the Uber system doesn't allow people to have that option.
Well, that might have been some of the magic of the Unicorn, that it could only show up like a real unicorn. It can only show up through circumstance.
Exactly.
Through luck.
Exactly. That's what I say when I find people who doesn't like that.
And then the ground shifted under his feet.
In the fall of 2013, following rivals like Lyft and Sidecar, Uber introduced a ride-sharing service called UberX that let anybody with a driver's license pick up a passenger with their own vehicle as long as they met certain criteria.
And with the rollout of UberX, Uber started lowering prices, and it kept on lowering them.
Travis, the CEO of Uber, raised a fortune in venture capital. He was using price as a weapon to grow quickly and outpace rivals with less money.
There was also a bigger mission. He said that Uber would replace car ownership.
Right, but Travis is, above all else, a competitor. He wanted to make sure Uber, not Lyft or anyone else, dominated the market for ride sharing.
It took a while for Sofyan to feel the effects of these changes.
Riders slowly migrated from Uber Black to the cheaper alternatives. Uber Black rates fell. Each ride became less profitable. But worst of all, Sofyan's drivers eventually figured out that they shouldn't be giving him a commission at all, but driving their own cars directly for Uber.
So when UberX rolled down, I was thinking to find other ways how to balance up my business with the changes. So the business kept being good up to the first, I would say, to the first quarter of 2014, and then we started to feel the effect of UberX, you know. So prices started to drop down, and maybe the demand was the same, but prices started to drop down because of the UberX launch. So from there, I felt that it was a turning point for the Uber system. Not necessarily on the bad way, I would say. Knowing the business from the beginning, I had to take some action to not lose money.
What about your drivers? Did they start to leave and go out on their own because there was this opportunity to use their own cars?
Oh, definitely. You have this pressure from your drivers to go away from you because there is that opportunity to end. And honestly, you don't have any choice than, of course, encouraging the drivers, just being nice with them and make as much as business they can with you, and then encourage them to go, you know, so because it's open for them.
By 2014, Sofyan had shut down his business, Global Way Limousine. But it's remarkable that he really understands why Uber made these changes and is at peace with it.
There was a huge, huge demand from customer side, and a huge demand from Uber to encourage people to have fleets at the beginning. But when the business started to change and policies change and prices started to go down a little bit, they had this idea, which is a brilliant idea, and I totally understand it. Drivers are more happy being their own, to be your own boss, you know. So I think that what makes Uber change their policies to not encourage people to have fleets anymore, because the drivers are more happier when they have their own car and their own business. And to be honest, it's a good decision. it's a good decision from them, because the company is healthier this way than it used to be, because some of the partners who had fleets and a lot of drivers, I can't tell you, my drivers, they were happy, but not all drivers who were driving for someone, they were happy. So,
well, because they were sharing their income.
Exactly, they were sharing their income, and sometimes without any good business criteria, you know. So they are sharing it. There was a lot of injustice in there, you know. So I saw things from partners who had fleets. That's sometimes they hire drivers and they give them like a very, very low, the lowest portion from the business they had. They were doing it in percentages, and the percentage they give them, it's just very low. So let's say the partner who hires 10 drivers, they give deals that are not in the favor of the driver. There is no balance to help a driver. So they were given, let's say, for an example, 70%, 30% deal. So the owner of the car takes 70% and the driver takes 30%, which is not right.
So at this point, Brad, is Sofyan still riding that white unicorn?
Well, Eric, we'll get to that. But yeah, Sofyan was now working for himself, driving for Uber Black, trying to make it in Uber's new economic reality. The days of $700 a day earnings were a thing of the past.
How much are you making now per day?
I would say it's an average of $350, which is still pretty good.
It's pretty good, but it sounds like half of what you were making in the heyday.
Yes, but I would say, let me tell you this. I would say back in the day, it wasn't normal. Uh-huh. The prices were...
And there was very little competition.
Little competition, and it was, to be honest, it was overpriced. I mean, for someone to take an Uber Black, which is the only option on the system, take an Uber Black from the financial district to North Beach for $25, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
It sounds like Sofyan is happy being his own boss, working for Uber Black, making a decent living.
Well, his story is a bit of an aberration. There are many drivers who work for UberX and other Uber services who struggle to make ends meet and don't make much above minimum wage.
Up ahead, we'll zoom in on that struggle so many drivers are facing, and we'll see what Uber is doing to make things better for drivers. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Inside the most successful organizations, IT has gone from supporting the business to driving the business. But the costs of legacy infrastructure can impede this progress. Budgets can't stretch enough to pay for digital innovation at the speed required. No one gets a blank check. The answer is to change the economics of your IT by shifting from ownership to use, from licenses to subscriptions, from proprietary to open. Change the economics of IT with open software from Red Hat. Learn more at redhat.com.
Okay, we're back. Right before the break, we saw Sofyan forced to dismantle his dreams of running a global taxi fleet
and deal with a 50% pay cut after Uber started rolling out cheaper services like UberX and UberPool, chipping away at driver salaries.
Eric, you and Olivia Zaleski recently wrote an amazing story about one extreme some drivers now go to, trying to make ends meet: sleeping in their cars in parking lots. Now, why would anybody possibly do this?
You know, we talked to one driver who lives in Sacramento, drives into San Francisco, slept at a Safeway, now McDonald's, worked all week. It's a way to maximize his income while keeping costs low. It's free to sleep in your car.
I can't imagine that they're smelling too good after a couple of days.
Well, some sneak off to a hostel or find a gym and take a shower.
So is there anything Uber is doing to incentivize this, or to put it another way, could they discourage it if they wanted to?
Well, sort of the ultimate Uber value here, right? Flexibility. The drivers are free to do whatever they want. Lyft restricts drivers to 14 hours of working continuously. Uber drivers set their own schedule.
It makes me wonder if drivers are kind of locking themselves into a career and a lifestyle that's getting worse and worse and harder over time.
Drivers say their pay's gone down over time and they're not really building up the skills to find another job. It feels to many of them like their career as they've chosen is getting worse and worse.
But we should point out that some of the drivers you guys spoke to were actually proud of the fact that they were sleeping in parking lots and in camps at night, that they felt like they had kind of hacked the Uber system.
Yeah, they're taking fares when they're at their most lucrative, you know, late at night, early in the morning, building their schedule around sort of the commuter and the late night millennial going out to a bar. So you know, they're going into this pretty clear-eyed. To explore this further, I spoke with one of our favorites, the rideshare guy.
Love the rideshare guy.
He's one of the most prominent experts when it comes to sort of thinking about the best way to make a living as an Uber driver.
My name is Harry Campbell. I'm an Uber and Lyft driver and founder of the Rideshare Guy blog, podcast, and YouTube channel.
Harry has been driving for Uber and Lyft since 2014.
I pretty quickly realized that it's not the most difficult job in the world, but it's definitely a little bit more complex than it seems. And so I started a blog about my experience as a driver, what it was like getting signed up, what it was really like working for the services. And now we try to really highlight the good and the bad about being an Uber and Lyft driver.
When Harry started driving for Uber, drivers could make $30 to $40 an hour on weekend nights. And Uber was advertising drivers could make $90,000 a year.
Right, although they recently settled the lawsuit about those kinds of exaggerated claims.
Yeah, Uber paid a $20 million penalty to the Federal Trade Commission for misleading drivers about earnings and vehicle financing claims.
So what does Harry, the rideshare guy, say about driving for Uber now?
He says Uber has been changing all along, and not many drivers are as accepting of this as Sofian.
The only constant in this industry is change, just knowing that, especially from a driver's perspective, I mean, what the strategies that you were using or the places you were driving or even the pay that you were getting 6 months, 12 months ago is not going to be the same today, right? And I think that's the big thing for a lot of drivers. Drivers don't like change. Nobody likes change, whether it's Uber Pool or whether it's lower rates or whatever it might be. So you definitely have that side of the equation for drivers. And I mean, for drivers that have been doing this for a while, they've sort of seen a very big shift.
Is that sort of vision of the 90K a year salary still a vision that drivers believe in today? How is sort of both the myth and the reality of being an Uber driver changed since you started tracking the company?
Well, I don't think there are any drivers today that are going in or getting into Uber expecting to make anywhere near $90,000 a year. I think that if anything, Uber has had more publicity sort of against that notion than they have for it. And, you know, kind of like what I always say is that it's still a good opportunity for a lot of people. It is still one of the most flexible jobs in the world. You can log on and log off whenever you want. It's just that it's shifting more towards if you want to make the most amount of money, you need to log on during certain times. You need to drive certain places. And so it might seem like it's flexible, well-paying from the outside, but once you actually start doing it and you start driving, you do realize that Uber does control a lot of when and where you drive.
Eric, I've noticed this also from talking to Uber drivers. Why are they dissatisfied with Uber Pool, as Harry suggests?
Pool makes their lives harder. It's more complicated. The hardest part of being an Uber driver is picking up passengers and dropping them off, and Pool asks them to do much more of that in an hour.
There's the perception, at least, that they're making less money. Do you think that's right?
The pay on Pool is super confusing, and it depends sort of who you trust. I think Uber would say when it works, on an hourly basis, drivers are making more because they're getting more people in their cars. But drivers see that on a per-passenger basis, they're making less. Passengers pay less in the hopes that they'll be able to cram multiple people.
And they may not always have a full car.
Exactly.
So last summer, Uber hired a new president, Jeff Jones, a marketing exec at Target. And Jeff has called 2017 the year of the driver at Uber. What does that mean exactly?
Well, one, it means they're just going to communicate with drivers better. You know, you can see him tweeting at drivers trying to answer their problems, posting on LinkedIn. They're going to improve their support so that drivers have someone they can reach out to. But this is an engineering company more and more, and Uber really thinks it can build tools to help drivers. That means, you know, when they want to head home, helping the route more efficiently get them home with fares along the way. So they're getting paid for every hour. The more rides you can get, the more your per hour pay is going up, or at least staying the same.
Uber has always, of course, paid lip service to drivers, but it feels to me that the key constituency has always been riders, and that over the years they've basically focused on lowering fares as almost a competitive weapon to try to corner the market in ride sharing.
Yeah, Brad, you know this better than anybody. Uber is built around the founding story of serving the rider. It's about calling a car with a push of a button when you want to go out late at night. It's not a company that was built sort of to give employment to sort of hundreds of thousands in the United States alone drivers. And so I think after the fact, they've sort of had to realize, oh, this is a two-sided marketplace. We need to celebrate riders and drivers.
So what is Uber telling you right now about this new focus on drivers?
I spoke with Nandu Janakaram, Uber's head of driver engagement, for the story about drivers who sleep in their cars. I thought it had relevance to this discussion. He said,
the way to make more money on our platform in general, and the way that everyone makes more money, is when the system becomes more efficient. So there is less time between trips for drivers. They're driving to places that are closer by to pick up passengers or things like that. Expanding the number of different kinds of trips that they can take, so Uber Eats and things like that. Like, the more efficient our system gets for drivers, the more that drivers feel engaged in our platform, and the more that we can keep driver earnings in a kind of stable place. And I think that's the big thing that we've been really pushing for from a product perspective, which is how can we bring general kind of stability to earnings.
So, Eric, what does Harry Campbell think about some of these new driver programs?
He's a bit skeptical. He believes there's one thing that can improve life for drivers, and that's more cash.
Show me the money.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me what drivers care about, and honestly, drivers are just like everyone else. They care about, frankly, their money, right? How much they're getting paid. All of the top articles on my site have to do with how much you can earn, how to make more money. When we surveyed our audience, pay was the number one thing that drivers cared about. So, I mean, I think that anything that can affect a driver's bottom line, and, you know, if I'm sitting at Uber, those are the things that I'm looking at.
So, Brad, let's get back to Sofyan Uali and the unicorn of San Francisco. Is Sofyan still driving?
He is still driving. In fact, I took a ride with him recently. He's still a faithful Uber Black driver, and he's starting to work on a book sharing some of his tips about driving for Uber.
And whatever happened to the unicorn?
The unicorn actually met a tragic end. Here's Sofyan describing to me what happened on a fateful Easter 2014.
So the unicorn... That was a very sad end of story for the unicorn. So one of my drivers actually, so this is what I do with my drivers when they have any problem with their car, their own car that they are driving. I just decide to give them my car, which is the unicorn, of course. I gave the unicorn for one of my drivers, and I got his car to some maintenance. And I remember the day when I gave him the unicorn, I said, hey, please take care of my baby. And he said, okay, yes. And 2 or 3 hours later...
Oh, no.
He called me and then he said, I got in an accident. I said, no, please don't me that. And I... When I got there, I saw the car and it was completely...
What happened?
Total, you know. So it was the night of Easter, and some drunk driver ran a red light, and this guy hit him, you know. So he hit the unicorn.
Oh, was everybody okay?
Everybody was okay, yeah. Fortunately, yeah. But the unicorn was totaled. So, From then, I just decided to not buy another unicorn, you know. So,
and so ends the story of the white Lincoln Town Car.
And that was the end, the sad end story of the Lincoln Town Car.
That's sad.
Yeah, in a weird way, Sofyan accepts it, just as he accepts the changes to the Uber system and seems to understand why the company made them. Toward the end of our conversation, I asked him one last question.
Do you ever dream about the unicorn?
To be honest, yes. Yes, I like that car. I love that car. But it's a sad story, the end of story, but I loved it. I loved the whole experience, you know. So the whole experience was just beautiful, beautiful. So no regrets.
Eric, when all is said and done, do you agree with Sofyan? Do you think Uber has been a generous steward of this powerful platform for drivers? Or, to put it another way, has Uber been a benign dictator in the taxi world?
I don't think I would ever use the word benign to describe Uber. I mean, they're sort of ruthless economic marketplace optimizers. You know, it's how can we get the most number of riders and drivers? And so when that's meant that they were getting plenty of drivers and not enough riders, they would lower the fare, attract riders, and make life a lot more difficult for drivers who are hoping to pay their bills.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think for a long time, the flywheel at Uber started with fares. If they lowered fares, they increased ridership, they put pressure on competitors, and they drew drivers to them. The problem is, and we both saw this over the past few years, it alienated drivers. Even if they were making as much or maybe even a little more money, and I don't know that that was the reality, they saw the decreased fares and they got mad and they protested. And Uber, over time, kind of developed a little bit of a poor reputation with some of its hardest working drivers.
And now obviously they're trying to improve it, but I'd like to point out one more problem on the horizon. Uber probably lost $3 billion globally in 2016.
Wow, $3 billion. And that's, of course, counting the big China competition that they basically surrendered on.
Right. And they're losing money in the United States. So looking at those numbers, you might think Uber is paying drivers too much. Uber will need to do something about costs.
Is this where we say only time will tell?
Only time will tell.
Hey guys, it's Aki. I co-host and help produce this podcast. And as we were about to publish this episode, a series of things happened that made consumers question Uber CEO Travis Kalanick's relationship with President Trump. And also Uber's stance on Trump's executive order banning visitors from certain countries. I'm sure you all saw the hashtag #DeleteUber trending over your social media feeds. We ended up running out of time to discuss this in the depth that it really deserves, but our episode next week is going to be all about this, all about the executive order, the tech industry's response to it, and what it means for the companies that we cover going forward. So stay tuned.
And that's it for this week's episode of Decrypted. Thanks for listening.
Tell us what you thought of the episode. Send us a voice message to our producer, Pia, at pgadkari@bloomberg.net. Or write to me on Twitter. I'm at Eric Newcomer.
And I'm at Brad Stone. Remember to check out my new book, The Upstarts, How Uber, Airbnb, and the Killer Companies of the New Silicon Valley Are Changing the World. Available from Amazon.com or your friendly neighborhood bookstore.
That's really shameless, Brad. Another book plug?
Okay, I know.
You can subscribe to Decrypted on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And leave us a rating and a review. It helps more listeners find our show.
This episode was produced by Pia Godkari, Magnus Henriksen, and Liz Smith. Alec McCabe is head of Bloomberg Podcasts. We'll see you next week.
Don't let your legacy IT systems cost you money, innovation, and a place at the digital table of the future. You can change your systems and the economics of IT with software from Red Hat. See how at redhat.com.